Ladies and gentlemen, my loyal listeners and viewers on Facebook Live, this is Frank R. Harrison right here on this episode of Frank About Health on talkradio.nyc. And I'm here today still with our day of compassionate healing. If you've heard the last hour, my guest Lee Tomlinson 2 weeks ago was talking about what it was like to understand the value of compassionate healing from his doctors, which prevented him from committing suicide. And today we continue that spectrum with our special guest, Dr. Jan Bonhoeffer, who actually has experience dealing more with the pediatric patient, but with his most recent research experience in immunology and vaccine safety with the NIH and with special committees when he was working on the H1N1 virus, as well as becoming a teacher from Switzerland. This show is actually my first international show. He's at the University of Basel in Switzerland, where he teaches about compassionate healing, which is something he learned during his research and during his practice. Today on Frank About Health, I'm going to be frank about what it's like to dare to care. As you can see, that is the name of his book. But daring to care is more than just medicine and more than just treatment methodologies. It's actually about using your heart in the ability to show love and compassion and empathy when treating your patient, regardless of their age. And so, Dr. Jan Bon, that's what I'm going to call you, Jan Bon. thank you for being here. This is a treat for me. This is my first international show, and I'm really interested to learn more about your book as well as your immunology practice, rather research. And just in general, thank you for coming. That's all I can say at the moment. Welcome to Frank About Health.
Well, thank you so much, Frank. It's a great honor to be here. This is probably the most heartwarming introduction I've had in 20 years of talking at, you know, conferences, and it was all very kind of objectified. So thank you. It's beautiful. It's a great honor to be here.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. People have listened to my previous shows, I mean, I personally am an epilepsy survivor. I know what it was like to treat my father during COVID, when he was actually recovering from cancer, and doing what I can while in quarantine, preventing him from getting that, you know, the disease, which could have made his cancer recovery in the negative direction. So I have just developed from my own experience the understanding that empathy and advocacy, first for yourself and then for others, but that has made me a natural healer of sorts. But I'm not a professional doctor. But when I read snippets of your book in the last few days, I just identified with you completely. So it's my pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you tell me a little bit first about what interested you in medicine? Was it the research or was it treating patients?
I believe it. The first spark was the fascination about the nature of the human being, about life. And it was looking down the microscope and seeing this amazing just unfolding of this creation. And I was just enthused and wanted to know more. And so that was certainly what really kept me going. And the other part was that I worked as a paramedic before I studied. And so I've seen a lot of things that I don't really wish anybody needs to see. And I've learned a lot of tricks about saving lives. And at some point I felt, well, you know, it's nice to know the tricks, but I really wanted to dig deeper and understand better. What is it that I'm actually doing here? And how does this actually work? How does the human body work? Mm-hmm. So there was a really deep interest. And the third element was that I always loved to be with people, being with people, mm-hmm. in a heartfelt, open, trusted environment was it always gave me energy. Mm-hmm. It was always energizing, enthusing. It felt alive. Mm-hmm. So in medicine, I felt, wow, both of those parts actually come together. I can be with people and this, we can share this beautiful experience of being alive. And then in my studies, I can learn about how does all of this work and kind of, you know, play the mental Sudoku here. A bit of Dr. House game, you know?
Understood. Understood. Now, yeah. as I look through your background, you first were in emergency management and pediatrics and then pivoted towards immunology research, or was it all combined?
Well, it started with kind of working as a paramedic, and then I went into the pediatric training. And then as I evolved in the pediatric training, I added the research part to it. And that led me to work in infectious diseases and vaccines. And so I've worked and built one of the larger independent vaccine safety networks, where we were bringing together researchers from all around the planet, from all professional backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And we're striving to see, can we really arrive at vaccine safety data that we can trust?
Right.
And so this was the last 20 years of my work. And then this is what got me to work with the CDC in the US and the FDA and NIH and, with the World Health Organization, the ECDC in Europe and many other national health company, authorities.
So is this already postgraduate from medical school, or were you also going through training at the same time?
No. This was kind of it started during residency. I started with some kind of simpler studies, and then we were building up this network, and then it went through attending and until I became a professor and kind of the usual, academic accolades. Yeah, this is what happened.
Awesome. Now, I was reading also in the book about how while you were coming up with the concept of treating your patients and doing your research, you came up with the understanding that in medical school, a lot of the training just skips the part of the empathy, which is the most crucial part. So what triggered you to really master that missing link and turn it into a book that is now available on Amazon.com, I gather, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, okay. Thank you. So there were many points, many sort of small pivoting points that were then kind of building up. So as I was getting deeper and deeper into research, and I got deeper and deeper into kind of objectifying life and people, mm-hmm. And I felt increasingly great about, you know, making a diagnosis. And until I realized at some point that actually making a diagnosis particularly helps me to understand and categorize life.
Right.
But it very rarely actually helps the patient. It rarely actually does much for the patient other than kind of having a stamp on the front and then actually not knowing what it means. And so from the patient perspective, I realized that whatever we're looking at together really looks very different. And there was one moment that really kind of completely changed my life. While I had seen so many people die as a paramedic, and then when I worked in India during a measles outbreak, and I worked in the UK during a meningitis outbreak, and so I've seen lots and lots and lots of kids die. But there was one moment with a 9-month-old baby girl here in Basel, and she had a muscular disease, so a neuromuscular disease, and so basically she had not a lot of force, not a lot of muscle strength. So she had a common cold. What is a common cold to us? And she couldn't get rid of the phlegm because she didn't have a cough impulse. She couldn't really get rid of it. And for many babies with this illness, it means we don't really know if they're going to survive or not. And so here was this baby that then ultimately I was fortunate. I was privileged to actually be there when she was leaving her body. And it was a really, really deeply moving moment because, not just because it's a baby girl dying, but it was the way that everything was set up. So we knew that this was pending and it was a real possibility that she was going to die. And so we created an environment for the family to be there in the hospital that, was a little different to the regular hospital environment. So very much in contrast to what we learned from COVID right now, where nobody was allowed to be there when their beloveds were alone and struggling and possibly dying. Mm-hmm. So we tried exactly the opposite. So we were actually kind of switching off the neon lights, we're bringing in candles, and we had adult beds, and we created this little area where the parents could be with their baby girl, and we had scents in the room, and we created, there was very gentle music, and it was really, really beautiful. And the parents were there, a very good friend of them was there. It was a beautiful setting. And this has, it was a beautiful passing, as tragic as it was, that moment was actually very beautiful. It was a transition that everybody felt like while this was a moment of death of a body, it was in a way a healing moment for everybody involved. And this has connected me with the family, and it has started the family to start a foundation to actually be there for other parents who are losing their children. So this was a very strong moment where I felt I realized that the most important healing force that we have, the most important healing power that we have on the planet is love. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard anything about this in medical school, and there wasn't anything on the webpage of the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. And so I started to question. I said, like, why is that? And the more I started asking and talking to other colleagues, to patients, to friends, everybody said, yeah, you're right. Actually, you're right. And actually, then I started to ask kids when they were in hospital, I said, what was the most important moment for you while you were here in hospital and now you're better?
Right.
It was never like, oh, doctor, you know, when you actually gave me that injection with the antibiotic or, oh, thank you for that morphine at the time when I was in pain. Yes, that was all appreciated, but it was like just the scratching on the surface. It was just the enabling condition to start a healing process. And then it was my mother's hand, or, you know, the moment when I felt so poorly, and there was this night guard and this nurse, and she just put her hand on my front, and then she had a little cooling something, and oh, then I could really let go. So it was the loving attention that the kids had pointed out.
So not only was it cathartic, but you were basically under an epiphany during a transition in life and for an infant.
Yeah. And then I started working with the coach. This is Arjuna Arda, who I then wrote the book together with.
Right.
And he helped me go through a vision quest, to see what is it? What is my future path going to be? And this became very clear to me that, I cannot do differently. It was like a calling, you know, like, yeah. I tried to save lives through vaccines, which is a very meaningful thing to do. And millions of lives can be saved with vaccines. So that's a very meaningful thing to do. And yet I felt there's one virus. Mm-hmm. There's one pandemic of a virus that is way more infectious than Delta, what we're seeing right now. There's one virus that is spreading far better and more, and is actually affecting every health, well, let's say almost every healthcare professional, certainly me. And it's the non-love virus.
Well, actually, we are about to head for our first break, but this is the perfect point to say that that's when you learned it is time to dare to care, and we will discuss that book when we return. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. For the next couple minutes, we will be back with Dr. Jan von Heffer, where we will dare to care right here on Frank About Health on talkradio.nyc and Facebook Live. Stay tuned.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Leibowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Everybody, welcome back to this special episode of Frank About Health. I find every episode special these days, especially the nature of the quality of guests. As far as I'm concerned, you're definitely one individual that I'm going to have a follow-up with, because I see you literally being an example of not only a doctor and a researcher and a professor, but someone who's really in touch with his consciousness, as you heard in the break just now. Sam Leibowitz, our network and our station producer, he has his own show on Thursdays, the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. And you just described an entire scenario about an infant who was passing on, who was dying because of a degenerative neuromuscular disorder. And you found yourself awakening your inner humanity to understand that what is missing, unfortunately, in most healthcare toolkits for the healthcare professional, for the medical student, is the ability to use that point in your heart and in your consciousness to really help the individual still heal them, even though they're passing on. That is something that I can truly agree with your statement, that it's not taught in medical schools. I think medical schools are just an educational system that teaches you how to treat the living individual. They don't really get to the point of knowing that there is that middle of the road place that actually has to also be engaged with, especially if they're a child, I presume. Mm-hmm. You know, so it sounds like to me that that book, Dare to Care, is becoming now not only a book that everyone must buy, it's a must read as far as I'm concerned, but it's now going to be probably taught in schools, correct? Or use as a teaching methodology.
I wish it was. I'm sure that many schools are looking into compassion and looking into mindfulness. So this is increasingly embraced by schools and universities, which is beautiful. And mindfulness is to me like the gate opener. It's the threshold into. It is the beginning of a process where you can eventually drop from your mind into your heart. So mm-hmm. Being mindful as a way to be cognizant, to be awake. I like the term awakefulness a little better than mindfulness. Mind sounds like a little bit of monkey chatter.
Yeah.
but a kind of awakefulness, being conscious, awake, alert to actually different aspects and possibilities to perceive the present moment.
Right.
That may allow us to drop into our hearts eventually. And that's what I really, that's where I feel true, authentic, meaningful, and deep connections happen. And that's what I believe is the only thing that really matters at the time we die.
Right.
And it is what matters most at times when we suffer.
Right.
And it is what elevates me most when I'm joyful.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, I think, again, like in my whole experience in watching personal family members and friends go through traumas, whether they're, you know, mental traumas or physical traumas, What is very interesting about me is I find that I instinctively know what's happening. Maybe it a lot has to do with my research, especially in the areas of neurological and mental health. But also, having been a patient multiple times for various issues throughout my life, when I talk to my doctors, I talk to them as if not we're colleagues, but as if we're, okay, we got a case here that we're going to work together on. And I don't know if that ingrained in me an instinct for having empathy when people are going through health problems, but I can understand the joy that you derive when, like, for example, when you were dealing with that child. This week, I'll be straightforward. My cousin had an emergency surgical procedure on her eye that was completely unexpected. But within seconds, we got it accomplished very quickly because I knew exactly what needed to be done, when it had to be done, how quickly, what financial resources we had, who were the right doctors to do it. It was like an automatic response for me, an automatic trigger. But you being a professional doctor, as well as a researcher and a professor of this field, I can see how you would be catalytically able to bring about a new methodology that I believe Dare to Care is going to become. It has to become some platform. The reason why I say that is, again, my guest 2 weeks ago, Lee Tomlinson, was on the brink of suicide until a doctor friend of his told him the benefits of fighting for his life from a compassionate point of view. It can't be just, I mean, it's unfortunate that it is a one-on-one circumstance depending on the patient and depending on the treatment provider, but it has to be introduced as a standard, like a final checklist, if you will. If you know that the patient is about to die, what can you pivot from just physical and medicinal treatments to spiritual treatments or some kind of linkages to that deep inner patient's needs so that they can feel the calm when they are transitioning? Everyone, as we know, is always afraid of death. I mean, we all want to live, but death is a part of life. And if it's already understood in the way that you experience, such as with that young patient, I think people would not, I'm not saying look forward to it, but they would accept it when it's about to happen because they would know there is good happening during and hopefully afterwards, you know?
So interesting. Thank you for what you're saying. Initially, you said with the tragic events and sad events with your father, mm-hmm. And your role in his, as a caregiver for him. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you are a kind of a healthcare professional in that regard, just looking at this relationship. And I would full heartedly agree that both your father as a patient, as well as you as his son, are actually healthcare professionals. You may not have had the exact training for the kind of condition that he was suffering from. Correct. But actually, you probably know aspects about his condition and primarily him as a human being that the physicians were not necessarily aware of and maybe never were. And so we at Heart-Based Medicine, we're saying, let's see the patient before the disease.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's where the patient is actually the physician. That's where the patient knows most. Yeah. That's where the son knows most. And that's why this is so, so important that the family is there when we're suffering and that the healthcare, so-called healthcare professionals then, mm-hmm. are, if you like, a supporting, coaching,
yeah,
circle around the family that is actually going through the healing process.
Yes. And
this is something I'd love to see as a change. You know, we see ourselves more like coaches rather mm-hmm. than the ones who are the carrier of the solution because we went to doctor school and we have lots of experience mm-hmm. and the patient is kind of the carrier of the problem. What if we just change that paradigm?
Right.
And actually the patient knows very well mm-hmm. what they need and what is really important and dear to them. And our role is to find out how can we best support what the patient actually wants rather than assuming what they want based on a diagnosis that we have made and the patient hasn't made it.
Correct. Correct. I would have to say that COVID has truly been an exposer to many levels of transparency throughout our lives, our countries, our healthcare especially, and not just the focus on making sure you don't get COVID or making sure you get tested or making sure you stay 6 foot apart or whatever. But those are like techniques. The real element is think inward and then project outward. And most people, unfortunately, are not only not taught that in medical schools, and if you don't go to medical schools, you have a lot of situations where it's not even taught in families. You end up learning by default. And I think where COVID was actually helpful is it put everyone on default status. You know, and so I think that in the case of my father, which I find very interesting, is no, I have no history in researching cancer or things like that. And most of my training is in business and psychology and social media. I'm more of a business and technology person. But the thing is that while I was studying psychology, a lot of it was in relation to the brain because of my history with epilepsy and looking at depression and comorbidities with epilepsy. And then my research by default for my thesis was at NYU Langone Health, which is an excellent teaching hospital here in New York. And at that same time, by using their resources, I felt like all of a sudden I was just becoming a healthcare professional or advocate. And then the unique element of my father is that the vaccines, when he started taking them, and I'm bringing this up because I know that's one of your expertises, obviously, that actually helped to resolve his tumors. But again, not being a scientist myself, I'm not able to validate or prove that. But from what I see, he's at a point where it's in resolution status with very little medical, with very little medicine. And that's because he had the support of me, my mother, my sister, some other friends of his, but we also would go to the doctor and show the compassion, show the concerns of COVID being a severe comorbidity in the healing process, but it was making sure that what people need to learn, and I'm sure the book Dare to Care references this, is that when you are dealing with a family member or friend that is going through a healthcare crisis, what organically results is a team effort to treat the case. The patient is a case study, you know, not to objectify or put distance from the patient. But if it's looked from a macro view, then people can probably dig deeper and inwards and learn to bring out the empathy when it's needed. It really becomes more of a self-awareness process, an awakening process, like you say. And that's something, no, I don't think any educational institution could teach that. It's like, you know it or you don't. And if you manage to become aware of it, once you know it, like in the example of you taking care of that infant, then you've got yourself a corner there to really master and build and advocate for others. Wow. I'm sorry if I've kind of gone over and aboard. We're about to head towards another break, but ladies and gentlemen, please buy this book, Dare to Care. It covers about insight and awareness and love and compassion and understanding, of course, the typical illnesses and treatments available for the patient. But as Dr. Jan had indicated with that young child, you have to reach inside your awareness, your soul, your heart, and understand that when you are really helping patients and providing the love and empathy and compassion to them, it makes the whole journey, whether it's a transition of end of life or even in healing, much more worth it, I guess is the right word, right? Or much more of an opportunity in disguise, I gather. All right. Yeah, we're about to go into section 3 right here on talkradio.nyc and Facebook Live. Stay tuned for this episode of Frank About Health with Dr. Jan von Heffer.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a cannabis enthusiast, a cannabis professional, or interested in entering the cannabis space. I'm Johnny Tsunami, and this is Planet Baco Lolo, a less taboo view. On our show, we will discuss the cannabis world through the perspective of various cannabis professionals. Tune in every Thursday evening, Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m., Talk Radio NYC, Planet Baco Lolo, a less taboo view.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. We are here with Dr. Jan von Heffer, Daring to Care, on this episode of Frank About Health. I think I went on a little bit of a diatribe about my views of the book. I just want to say, if you don't mind, Dr. Jan, about some of your topic lines for each chapter. I think this might also incite people to really go and get this book, because it really is about teaching yourself how to awaken yourself in times of crisis. For example, it says, listen to your patients. Taking care of yourself is fundamental. Trust resonance. Question what is normal. Of course, dare to care. Create loving relationships. Set the tone for the day. Learn from your mistakes. Choose your role models. And connect with the infinite. I love that statement. You know, so overall, I think this is something you mentioned about you're going to develop a course. Are you probably thinking about doing that there in Switzerland?
Yeah. So given the current times, we're just right now actually developing an online course that should go live in probably end of February. End of January, beginning of February. So this will be a course that is directed at healthcare professionals. That is nurses, therapists, physios, ergo, doctors, like whoever is caring, caregivers, right. of any kind, because it's challenging to actually stay authentic, stay connected to our hearts, not forget to have our heads screwed on. Mm-hmm. You know, yogaing harder and meditation doesn't heal meningitis, right? So, you know, like there's both parts of the spectrum that we have to keep balanced, but
right.
we tend to kind of shift towards one balance and forget side of the equation and forget about us. And this is what led me to write the book, is that this is written in the form of letters to my goddaughter, who is a young resident. And so I felt, what is it that I can pass on to her? She's going to get all this knowledge from all these professors anyway. So, so maybe there's something else I can pass on. And so I felt, let's write about things that you don't learn at medical school, about a kind of resilience that is not based on being tougher and harder, which is the kind of resilience that I was trained in when I was a resident. You know, so kind of work for 9,620 hours nonstop and have your coffees all the time and run yourself, you know, run infusions into yourself. So you're kind of staying awake and dehydrated and don't sleep, and then even feel great about it. You know, and even come with this hero idea of, oh, I slept less than you did kind of competition. Utterly ridiculous. Can you imagine? Would you would you go to, would you, if you want to learn to play the violin, let's say,
okay,
would you go and seek out a teacher that has learned everything about playing the violin, but has never actually played the violin? No, you wouldn't, right? Would you go to a fitness trainer? Would you hire a plumber who has it? Would you hire? No, but you actually go and see a doctor who has learned about health, but actually wasn't required. It wasn't part of the training to take care of your own health and realize and recognize how difficult that is and what it actually takes to promote your own health. So what we've learned is to fight disease. And just note the language, we're fighting disease. We're in a war against cancer. Wow, what are we doing here? We're talking about nature. So what about actually promoting health regardless of where you are? And so that starts at home. It's how can I promote health of somebody else if I'm just sleep deprived, depressed, frustrated, on the brink of burnout? And you mentioned it, the suicide rate among healthcare professionals is incredible. And right now during COVID, it's skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. So this is where I felt, okay, let's start fresh and see what are some really urgently missing elements in our training as physicians. And also, how can we really empower the patient? And right, one of the key points is promoting health. And another one is that healing has to do with a sense of enoughness, a state of enoughness here. If I'm actually in a state of neediness or a sense of incompletion, which is very, very frequent, very common. I plead guilty of this. So I'm just describing things that I've noticed in myself. And then I started looking around, so like, whoops, I'm not alone. So the sense of I'm not good enough, you know, I need to work harder. I need to work longer hours. I may have not given justice to the patient's needs. These are all feelings that healthcare professionals all know. And so when we're living in a constant state of neediness and incompletion, then right, how can we actually invite somebody else who is suffering in a safe place? How do we don't radiate the kind of safety? What we may radiate is like, I'm the professor and I know what's good for you kind of authority and safety, but it rings a very different resonance than actually saying, I'm here as a human being and I'm with you in this process of not feeling well, and let's work it out together, because only together we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where daring to care comes in. This is where it actually takes courage to care, and particularly in the current environment, in the current, if you like, the way the system is built and the way the kind of the culture among healers is, it actually takes courage to actually feel into your heart, to listen to your intuition,
mm-hmm,
and to let that be part of the equation, and to let that be part of the guidance, not right, the only one, but part of it, so that we're actually full human beings. We have a heart and we have a brain. Why are we only using our brains? We're missing out here. We're not showing up in the best version of ourselves.
Right.
And to my mind, when I look at myself at moments of frustration and despair, when I look at my colleagues who are really, you know, burnt out and at the brink of not wanting to live this life any longer, very often this has to do with a sense of isolation, a sense of feeling alone, a sense of not being good enough, a sense of being separate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the opposite of love. So right, when we dare to be vulnerable, when we dare to open up, suddenly we're energized, suddenly we feel connected, suddenly we feel the other person, suddenly there's meaning, suddenly there's purpose, suddenly there's So isn't it that what most healthcare professionals actually went into this profession for in the first place?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I mean, I call it expanding the boundaries of your individuality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you understand yourself first, then it's able to do that. But unfortunate, like you said, if you don't feel enough self-esteem or self-worth, or you don't feel complete, you can't expand what you already are restricted from to begin with. So that becomes the challenge.
Yeah. And so we have to bring this to the ground. So the book is very much about like, okay, this is kind of what we just talked about. We could say like, yeah, this is all nice philosophy. But if I'm now actually working on, let's say a COVID ICU, okay, and I've been, my other shift partner is actually sick right now. So I'm actually working double shift right now. Mm-hmm. And then I listen to the two of us talking. I'd probably go like, guys, you know, sorry, I don't have time for this right now. I'm actually suffering. So what we could do. And so what the point of the book is to say, okay, so here's an awareness that there's a need. Mm-hmm. Now, how can we bring this to the ground in the way that it actually works at the front line, that it actually works in daily business? So how can I actually be with the family and with work and not feel like I'm torn in two directions and I can't manage both?
Right.
So what are the possibilities? What are the concrete little things that take 1 minute? 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes to be completely out there so yeah. I can actually fit it into the day.
Right.
And there's so many important little things. Like we were joking at the beginning of COVID, everybody was talking about PPE, right? Personal protective equipment. And so we said, what about a different, let's give this a different spin. So we said, what about pause, presence, engage? That's our PPE.
Very nice.
So for example, before I open the door of a room, when I go from one patient to the other, one option is to walk out of one room and just immediately go to the next one, open the next door, boom, into the next room. Another one is to actually take like a literally 2-breath pause before I go into the room.
Mm-hmm.
Just to recenter myself, just to really clear the table, just to really kind of give myself permission to show up fresh and new again.
Right.
Very simple. No magic, no woo-woo, just very simple. But if we actually do it, it makes a huge difference. What about getting up in the morning and start with hydration? Start with a simple thing like a warm glass of water, you know, with maybe a little bit of lemon in there, and then actually just sit still for a few minutes while I'm drinking this and just giving myself energy before I give energy to everybody else all that day. Right?
Correct.
It makes a huge difference. It kind of sets the tone for the day and it changes so much. So the book is full of these tiny little things that, that are workable and that are workable for both patients as well as physicians. So yeah. And then we try and take it one step deeper. Then we take it one step deeper and see, so apart from the things you can do, mm-hmm. is there also a way that we can look at what are ways to be?
Yes.
So what about not doing something? What about not adding something else? Oh, now I'm already exhausted and now I have to do this lemon thing in the morning and I have to do the breathing thing on top of things and I have to do more doing because now it's spiritual doing.
So that's almost like living outside of yourself. And those people, right. unfortunately, would always be limited in terms of being able to really provide their best self towards helping to heal others, you know? Right. I mean, you have me fully engaged. If this is, for example, your first lecture in your course, I will be there.
Great.
But hey, actually, I think we're about to head for another break. But before we go, I did want to ask you, you said something about continuing education relative to this course you're developing. Is this something that you anticipate people will become eligible to actually earn continuing education credits?
Oh, absolutely.
Established?
Absolutely. We want this to be a CME accredited, continuous medical education accredited course. Mm. And because it's basically, why not? You know, like if we accredit courses for anatomy and surgery and ophthalmology and you name it, all the good things, why should we not accredit courses that are actually about taking care of our own health and right. making sure that we can provide the kind of health in the best version of ourselves?
Right. So, now, yep. ladies and gentlemen, we will wrap up and we will talk more about the future of Dare to Care, the book and the future course, as well as some other questions about the future that I actually would like to know based on his experience with immunology. That being said, stay tuned right here on talkradio.nyc and Facebook Live, and we will be frank about daring to care in just a few.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Everybody, welcome back. We're about to wrap up this episode of Frank About Health. It has been an interesting 45 minutes with Dr. Jan. I feel like it has been cathartic for me on many levels, validating a lot of the work that I've been doing, both on this show and in my own personal life. But there is the aspect of COVID that continues to linger on, not only in our society, but on most of the episodes where we talk about, for example, how COVID has changed the paradigm for many people, health professionals, patients, families, the list goes on. But you are, Dr. Jan, an immunologist and concerned with vaccine safety. What is your take on the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines? The reason why I picked those two is because they are the genomic vaccines. What is the proper term that they refer to them as?
mRNA vaccines.
That's right. That's right. And that now there's talk about starting next week or the week after, they're going to require the third booster for those people who have 6 months out since their second shot, as well as for those that are immunocompromised. You know, my father would fit that case, being that he had to deal with cancer recovery. Do you think it is something that people should dare to care about? I mean, because of the nature of it being genetic in compound, it kind of implies that it could become the new vaccine treatment modality for other illnesses, like maybe even cancer or HIV AIDS or diabetes or anything that most people have relied upon the system to say, once you have it, that's it. I mean, we now see opportunities for a curative, correct?
Yeah, well, you're touching on many points. maybe start with the last bit. Yes, the mRNA vaccine technology is a kind of technology that we know for 20 years in research is nothing much new. That it's a little bit like a sledge. You can think about it like a sledge, and then there's somebody riding the sledge, right? So the sledge is always the same. The basic construct is the same. And then you kind of pluck on to that sledge one little protein or one little piece that can be recognized by the immune system. And this time we call it spike protein, and it's an important part of this coronavirus. Right. So, but other virus elements or other, let's say particles of microorganisms have been already plugged onto the same sledge or very similar sledges, vaccine constructs. And so, yes, we will see more. And as you say, because it actually, this kind of technology emulates the natural infection in many ways, it will be used for other infections, and it may well be used for other applications. So absolutely, yes.
So you are believing that the third booster is something that we should all be serious about when it's finally issued, correct?
Well, that's a whole different question. So, and I think there's a bit of a confusion out there. So let me make sure that I understand what exactly you mean. There's one indication for three doses is that you are immunocompromised in some way. And so it's actually a good idea to have, if you like, not one priming dose and then one booster dose, but to kind of have two priming doses and one booster dose so that you have three doses together so that your immune system will actually respond in a way that is similar to those with the competent immune system. That's one indication for three doses. And another indication for three doses is that you're basically a healthy person and you had both doses, your two shots. and then what we're seeing now is that there is waning immunity. So for different people it's different, for different age groups it's different, but somewhere between sort of 6 to 12 months, for most probably 9 to 12 months, it looks like immunity is waning. And so here the question is, as with other vaccines, do we need a third dose to boost? So is there a need to say, okay, we have two doses that are actually priming doses, and then there is a boosting dose after 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. Right. And this is what's worked out in different countries in different ways right now, but the basic theory is understood everywhere that probably a booster dose, a third dose as a booster is a good idea if you want to provide long-term protection. Now, all of that is said just related to Delta, because that's as far as we know. Now, when we talk about Lambda and Mu and others, well, I don't know. The future will tell. So we're just about, like, as we speak, this is kind of being understood better in what that might mean for other variations of the virus.
Right. We're going with the flow. So in essence, the reason why we're talking about the third booster for Delta is because we're seeing that it's a combination of those that were never immunized with the vaccine that are carrying the Delta mutation. And then those people who have been given their two doses who are now having breakthrough cases. So I could see that immediate response. But then, like you said, the other mutations that are totally vaccine resistant. I mean, that tells me that regardless of how many doses we get this year alone, being vaccinated for COVID is going to become an annual event, just like the way it is for the flu. I mean, that's pretty much as transparent as I believe.
It looks like it. Many people would say so. I have, working with infectious diseases and biologicals, I have become a little bit hesitant predicting the future.
Right.
So I think it's prudent to just say, our current state of ignorance is, and then continue the sentence.
Pretty true. I mean, it's like from the perspective with your book and the course and Daring to Care, something not taught in schools, and from the perspective of vaccines for a pandemic that no one have ever expected in this lifetime to actually see compared to 100 years ago, we are all pretty much, I guess, flying blind is one way of putting it. Flying by the seat of our pants, learning more about our inner strengths and how to use them to maximize the best results. This is where all of us, I mean, healthcare professionals, advocates, patients, all of us are really learning that it is imperative, as I've said in previous shows, to own your healthcare. That's what it has to be. And for healthcare providers to really learn empathy as a critical tool amongst the others that they've learned in med school and so forth and so on. But I gather maybe my wish is that the mRNA vaccines could actually lead to cures for such what have been considered in the past fatal illnesses like AIDS and cancer and others. But that's something that I think is probably a big undertaking for anybody to really consider until we really finally get a hold off this COVID virus in the next year or two, or however long it takes, hopefully sooner than later. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was my own little take this week. I know that there's going to be a lot of decisions in the media about whether or not people should be taking their third booster shots and whatever the vaccine efficacy is going to be. But going back to the future of Dare to Care and of the work that Dr. Jan is doing, I already know, Dr. Jan, I'm going to put you in touch with people at NYU Langone Health, but that'll take a couple months, but we'll be in touch and I'll be able to do my best efforts to see that this book becomes a required course material, if not yet a course. I'm looking forward to learn more about the development of this course. I would love to get CEU credits on something like this, considering this show has become a platform to communicate those issues. Recently here in New York State, our former governor, Andrew Cuomo, had offered through Cornell University to get public advocacy credits for free. It was state funded in order to be a helper in times of pandemic crises. And I participated. I got my certificate in July, and now I'm actually using it as a credential in my own research and things that I'm doing besides this show. So it's something that I can tell you already have someone here that's going to participate in the course when it finally comes out. Is there a website or other media channels or other resources that you could tell the viewers and listeners out there where they could reach you or where they could learn more about other things that you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So the book is available on Amazon, and it's also available, like, there are free chapters for download if you want to take a sneak peek on heartbasedmedicine.org, as you say it, heartbasedmedicine.org, one word. And you will also see us on social media, on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. And we were just, I'm learning about social media. I didn't know how to spell Facebook 3 years ago, so... So I'm learning about this, and we're increasingly building these platforms to inform and to share valuable information that is kind of short snippets, digestible, and interviews, podcasts, and those are also available through Heart-Based Medicine or Heart-Based Med. There are different handles in the different social media. We're also starting on Clubhouse now, which is a really interesting platform to really get together and to co-create this field further. I just feel like an inspiration. I don't have a solution to share here to say, like, okay, this is, you know, follow me here. I'm seeking the conversation and see how can we actually co-create something among like-hearted.
Yes. Yeah. That's again, what Sam Leibowitz would say. We are all co-creators in our awakening and as well as in our healthcare. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are about to end this episode of Frank About Health. Stay tuned to next week when I will be frank about autism spectrum disorder with my returning guest, Solange Pilizoda. In addition, stay tuned at 6 o'clock for our own Johnny Tsunami, who will be talking about that crazy weed known as cannabis on Planet Pakalolo. Everyone who wants to reach me or Dr. Jan with any questions can email me at frankabouthealth102@gmail.com. Thanks for listening on Facebook Live and talkradio.nyc. And we will be back next week, and stay tuned for Johnny. Thanks for being here, Dr. Jan. I will be in touch with you tomorrow.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Frank. Amazing show. Really beautiful. Thank you for your work.
Oh, and you're very welcome, and thank you for being here.
Or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Did you know that nearly 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Inning. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Get up. post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.